relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very proud to introduce our guest host for today, Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. G. This is Jennifer Horn, in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. So glad to be here. Day number two for me, and I always love hanging out with you guys. Merry Christmas, by the way, from all of us at America First to all of you. Want to remind you to check out SebGorka.com. You can follow Seb on Twitter at SebGorka. Check us out on YouTube. We're streaming live right now, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at Jennifer Horn, on Parler, on Facebook, and you can always call us. 833-33-GORKA is the number to join us. Now, I am super excited to welcome in our next guest. He is a friend of mine, a great guy, has great perspective on politics because, oh, nothing, he lived it. His name is Michael Reagan. Last name may sound familiar. He is the son of Ronald Reagan, the president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation, and of course, an author, a motivational speaker. He speaks all over the country, and he contributes to Newsmax, one of the top growing media companies out there right now. Michael Reagan, welcome to America First. Thanks for being here.
And good to be with you. How long has Gorka been guest hosting for you?
Actually, you want to know something funny, Michael? He was on last hour, and we thought we were in like some weird time warp because I was actually interviewing him on his program. So it was sort of weird. We were like in a Star Trek episode. Follow Michael right now on Twitter at Reagan World. And Michael, I want to ask you about this COVID-19. They're calling it a stimulus bill. It is not a stimulus bill. I don't even think it's a relief bill. There, yes, is $600 in it for Americans making under $100,000 a year, but there is so much pork. This is an omnibus spending bill. It is crazy. There's so much money for foreign governments. There's money for a gas can commission to warn people that stuff inside the gas can is flammable. There's stuff for racehorses. I mean, they were just packing it all in to this bill. What was your initial reaction? Because you were sending out a warning on Twitter saying we need to rise up and we need to stop this stuff.
Well, the problem is that nobody really is educated how the whole system works, and the media really goes along with it. Yeah, it's a game. I wrote an op-ed piece last week on it, you know, that's at Newsmax right now. If you go to the opinion section, and what happened back in 2010, up until 2010, you know, there's rules in Congress. One of the rules is that we will pass our 12 appropriations bills by September 30th, which is the end of the government fiscal year.
Right.
The new year starts every year on October 1st. And in 2010, they changed it. The Congress changed it. Obama had full control, Senate, House, everything else. They changed it. And they started putting out continuing resolutions because they found out that they could put laws into effect in a continuing resolution that they could never get passed in a regular session of Congress. And that's where the bridge to nowhere comes from. And all this stuff comes from just a continuing resolution. And what they do is they back it up to an important day, Christmas. My God, it's the end of the year. We're
right.
Just going to fund the government for two more days. We've got to do something quick. And they put everybody in America into this panic mode. Oh, my God, the government's going to shut down. The government's never going to shut down. But it is a ploy to put into these bills all of the things that they could not pass on a normal basis. And of course, this year, this is quote unquote COVID relief into the middle of it, which allowed them to do exactly what they did. Also, there's another little piece of information, because I was an honorary member of the 104th Congress, along with Rush Limbaugh. And the first thing the 104th Congress did on their first day is put a rule into effect that no bill can be voted on until it is read first.
Right.
So if you're ever watching C-SPAN, which is can bore you to death, if you're watching C-SPAN when they're going to take a vote, you'll see the sergeant-at-arms say what? He says, under the suspension of the rule, we'll now take a vote. But nobody ever asked, what rule are you suspending?
About reading the bill.
The suspending is reading the bill.
You have got to be kidding me. Michael Reagan, this is why you are such a wealth of information. I've heard that. I have never known what that was about. That is, you know, crazy. First of all, I'm already a little shook today because I found myself agreeing with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I can't believe it.
Yes.
It was a Christmas miracle. But she was absolutely right when she said this is a hostage situation. You give Congress 6 hours to read 5,593 pages. I mean, I know I've known speed readers in my life, but no one is averaging 1,000 pages per hour and consuming this information. So how?
Well, then you look at what I said in the tweet this morning. I said the reality of it is the Congress is patting themselves on the back for giving money to the guy at the end of the off ramp that's begging. I mean, that's what they did, and they're patting themselves on the back by saying, "We just gave you $600. Aren't you happy?" And you're looking. It's been months. These people are out of work, out of jobs. There's no place to go. And they give them $600. They give them a little stipend, you know, to get by.
But because the mainstream news media is complicit in this, because they're acting as the public relations branch of the Democrat Party, what's happening here is that this morning, every news channel that I looked at was celebrating. You're getting $600. That relief is coming. Well, we know, we both live here in California, in L.A. County, that $600 is not going to pay your rent, not even for 1 month. And people have been out of work for months, 9 months for some people. Businesses are being shut down. The economy was great last year at this time. Now it's tanking, and you're going to hand someone $600 and pat yourself on the back as you go home to your nice little house on the hill. I mean, the hypocrisy in this one is rich, but then you couple it with like, it almost gets insulting when you have a commission about the sexuality and the gender assignment of statues. I mean, there are people who are suffering on the streets, Michael, and these pet projects are getting pushed in to a bill where that money could really help people.
Yeah, absolutely right. And this is what these people constantly do, and nobody ever holds them accountable. And the media never holds them accountable, ever holds them accountable. And this is going on and has been going on forever, continuing resolution after continuing resolution. And what do they have now? They have a continuing resolution for the government to run for 9 months. And guess what's going to happen in 9 months? Oh, my God, we're going to run out of money. We've got to do something quick.
Yeah.
And then they're going to do what? They're going to put something else out there and shove it in, you know, and say, look what we've done. Government's going to run for another 3 days. Gosh, I hope we get to Thanksgiving next year. This is a game that they sit there and play, and nobody tells how it started, why it happens, and that's the media. The media, just the downfall of the media, not doing their job of telling the American people the game that's absolutely being played on them, and then watching people applaud themselves in Washington, D.C., as if they've done something absolutely magnanimous and should be reelected because of what we just done.
Yeah, Michael Reagan is the president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation. He is an author, a motivational speaker. You can check out his columns at Newsmax, newsmax.com, where he's a media contributor, and follow him on Twitter at Reagan World. Now, your dad was in the White House, and you watched him negotiate. And one of the greatest presidents, I think, in our nation's history, certainly. When you watched him negotiate through all of this stuff, was the problem the same then, or is it getting worse now? What do you think? When you've been watching history unfold, are we in any different situation than we were when your dad was in office?
Well, we're in a worse situation today because we have too much media. I mean, we really do. And I've told people this. I said, people watch Fox to be ticked off at MSNBC and CNN to be ticked off at the left. Mm-hmm. People watch MSNBC and CNN to be ticked off at the right. And ultimately, everybody goes to bed at night ticked off. Nobody's having fun anymore. And it's always an argument. You know, I told somebody the other day, I said, Johnny Carson, nobody will ever tell you what party Johnny Carson belonged to, but he made you laugh your butt off every night.
That's right.
Now you know who everybody belongs to. So, again, we're not having fun in America. And we need to get back to really having fun. The negotiations were tough back then, as they are today, but still my dad and Tip O'Neill got together, passed the largest tax break in American history. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you just, you know, you figure it out. But again, too much media today, too many people on both sides yelling and screaming at each other and not wanting to come together because guess what? There's money in ratings.
That's right. We have about a minute left with you, Michael, and hopefully you can hang out for another segment because I want to ask you about this push on the 2020 election and get your perspective. But in this last minute of this segment, do you think President Trump ought to veto this bill? I know he made a promise to not sign anything that no one had read. No one has read this bill. I don't think anybody can honestly say they have. So should he veto this as it sits on his desk?
Well, the reality of it is he did make that promise. He wouldn't sign anything that nobody had read. And I tweeted out this morning, He should veto it. But the other side of the coin is January 5th, right around the corner.
That's right.
And I think the big fear is if he vetoes that bill,
they have
no way will he win on January 5th, which the Republicans have to win on January 5th. So he's between a rock and a hard place. Should he veto it? Yes. Will he veto it? No.
Yep, that's kind of exactly what I'm thinking. It's the same mentality. They have him in this hostage situation. There is no winning in this at all, and they know that. That's why it's sitting on his desk waiting for his approval. But I think he should have a press conference and read through what's in it to at least make the American people aware of what's inside. More up ahead with Michael Reagan, Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka on America First.
I'm Sebastian Gorka on America First. Let's get back to the show with Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. G. I am Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. You found us on America First. Check out sebgorka.com. All right, we held him over. He is back. Michael Reagan is our guest in this half hour. You can follow him in the world. He is the president of the Reagan Legacy Foundation. He's an author, a motivational speaker, and he is a contributor at Newsmax.com. Welcome back, Michael Reagan, to America First. And I also have to do a little plug. I know things are closed and COVID is crazy, but if you're ever in California, one of the best and greatest things that you can do, and this is not just because you're here, I tell this to people. I literally just told it to Dr. Drew Pinsky last week that you got to go to the Reagan Library when you're in Southern California. It is the most beautiful of all presidential libraries. It's fantastic. It's a gem. It is something worth seeing when you come to California. Definitely check it out.
Drew Pinsky's never been there?
He's never been. Dr. Drew said to me, I've never been to the... Nope, we talked about it last week. He said, I've never been. I said, you are missing out. I said, I go at least three times a year.
Tell him to call me.
I will.
And when it's open and I'm going to go up there, I will call him and he can meet me there.
I will absolutely do that because not everybody gets a personal tour of the Reagan Library from Michael Reagan, the son of the president. And by the way, thanks for offering that to me. It's okay. I've given self-guided tours to myself, but that's all right, Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Okay,
Don't work it too hard.
I know that is true. But let's talk about President Trump and his hopes to stay in office. We have not yet spoke about this. I'm not sure where you stand on the issue of the 2020 election. So let's start at the beginning. Do you, Michael Reagan, think that there were instances of voter fraud and irregularities?
I believe there's instances of voter fraud and have been in every election since I've been alive.
God love you. This is true. And anybody who says that voter fraud doesn't exist is lying to you or disingenuous. Okay. So we've got that in the bin here. You think it happens. It happens in every election. I agree with you. Was there enough of it to swing the outcome of the election?
No, I don't believe so. I was thinking today because I know I was going to do this interview with you.
Mm-hmm.
Were there only four states where they had voter fraud? I mean,
no.
You sit there and think about it. There's 50 states voting. Were there only four that had voter fraud? Were all the other states cool? I mean,
well,
I know,
no, not every state was cool. In fact, we know in California, the voter fraud runs rampant here every single election.
Yeah.
President Trump got 5 million votes. I'd say he probably got a lot more than that. But the voter fraud is real. The Democrats have figured out how to ballot harvest and collect ballots. They did that in 2018. They cleaned the clock of Republicans. Now, Republicans got smart and started to fight back a little bit. But voter fraud happens. Exploitation of rules happens in every single election. But no, it didn't happen in just four states. But those four states, I think, are the ones where the biggest, the largest amount of voter fraud, at least in the hundreds of thousands or the tens of thousands.
And the other side,
and that's what's being challenged.
I think about in this is the fact these are Trump-appointed judges that are saying, get out of my court. This is
right.
This is Trump's appointed Supreme Court judges saying, you know, you don't have standing here. We're just not going to go forward. And if any judges would be in his, you know, on his side, they would be Trump appointed judges. So I look at all this and say, do I think fraud happened? Yeah. But I'm not in a court of law. So I don't know what happens in a court of law. But when judges start saying, you don't have standing, you don't have standing, you don't have standing, or whatever it might be, or you don't have the evidence that you're talking about on the front steps, you don't have that same evidence inside the courtroom,
mm-hmm.
I tend to have to go somewhat with the judges because we all get caught up. You know, we watch something happen on TV, and we see a video of what we believe is a crime. And then when all the information comes out, we find out that really wasn't a crime at all. That was just part of the system. And so, no, I don't think it came to the level of the president overturning those states and keeping the presidency. I think the courts ruled, the Electoral College ruled, they all ruled. And it's really time to say, hey, congratulations. We'll live to fight another day, maybe.
Well, you know, I'd actually
it's not gonna go anywhere.
And let's talk about it, because I think I'm glad we're going down this road, because I think it's an interesting conversation to have. The Supreme Court, I think, did not want the weight of overturning a presidential election on them. We know the Chief Justice John Roberts is extremely worried about the image of the Supreme Court. And I think his weight and his opinion in that court matters. I think that they would have maybe heard the case, but they knew that they were not prepared to make that decision, and they didn't even want to get basically dirt on their hands in going down that route. When it comes to the Trump-appointed judges, I do think that it's interesting to watch. Look, I've always said I believe that there's fraud. I believe that there's irregularities. And I actually think there was a lot of it in this election because I saw it happening. You kid me about working a lot. I was working on election night. I was here until after midnight Pacific time. I was back here at 4:30 a.m. They had stopped counting when I left here. They had started counting again when I got back. And when I got back, I watched it. The number ticked up by like 100,000 votes in Wisconsin and in Michigan into the Biden column without one vote added to the Trump column. Now, look, maybe it's an easy explanation, but just what is it? The acknowledgement of what did I see? Because I know, you know, I'm sometimes a crazy person, but I saw it. I'm rational. I want to know what happened and where that came from. But the clock is ticking. And so to do a legal case to prove fraud takes years to actually make that case. Where I think there's more of an opportunity, and so far we haven't seen any traction, is contesting the fact that they changed the rules without legislature approval in states like Pennsylvania. And I think there's actually precedent that was set here in our state of California. No one talks about it, Michael, because Gavin Newsom, our governor, had his hand slapped for rolling out universal mail-in ballots without state legislature approval.
Oh,
and they called it an
and
overreach.
I think this is where the Republicans need to go.
Right.
They
this
need
is the
to
spot.
Deal with this and clean it up for 2022, 2024, and clean it up. Do so instead of spending all day long griping about it. Do something about it. Win it January 5th. Have the Senate do something about it and fix it. Because this was the first. This is the first time we've had universal ballots out there.
That's right.
And you knew there was going to be more fraud because of the nature of having universal ballots. So we weren't able to do what we need to do this time. And if we should have done it earlier than later. But now you know. So make sure that it doesn't happen in 2022 and 2023. You know, 24, but work on that because this one's not going to be overturned. It's out of the box. It's done. And I think that Trump doesn't do himself a great service by keep on fighting on.
I just feel like he's the only one with the backbone. He's the only one with the backbone to do it.
Backbone is fine. But the reality of it is you start looking spoiled. Like, Trump's never lost. This is new to him. And he's reacting as it's new to him. And he has a backbone, but that backbone is not going to carry him to the presidency on January 20th.
Brings the attention to the issue, and I think he is needed. I don't know if the bench for Republicans is deep enough, but got to ask you, a question on another day, Michael Reagan, as to who should be sitting on that bench. But we will do that. Michael Reagan, thank you so much for being with us. Follow him right now at Reagan World and check him out at Newsmax.com. Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka. This is America First.
FDNY firefighter Stephen Silver gave his life while saving others on 9/11, and the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. I'm asking you to support this cause that's committed to honoring our nation's heroes and ensuring people never forget 9/11. Help Tunnel to Towers to do good. Donate $11 a month at tunnel2towers.org. That's tunnel2towers.org. Thank you.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
Thanks for joining us on America First. I'm Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and it's been a pleasure to hang out with you the last couple of days. Thanks for being with us. You can follow Seb at Seb Gorka and SebGorka.com. All right, joining us right now is a man who really fought for this position to be a congressman in California. He did it. He won. And now he had to make an awful decision and vote for the COVID-19 air quotes relief bill. Joining us right now, Congressman Mike Garcia from California's 25th district. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Garcia 2020. And Mike, welcome to America First. Thanks for being with us. Now, you fought hard with this, all to have to go back to Washington, D.C. and vote on what was a really pork filled COVID-19 relief bill.
Yeah, no, this is it's been a terrible several weeks leading up to this. And, you know, if we ever wonder why Congress has the lowest approval ratings of any institution in the country, this is why. Unfortunately, we ended up having a single bill where it was not only a COVID relief, but it was also bundled up with a $1.4 trillion appropriations bill. And so the COVID relief package was desperately needed. It's something that we should have been doing back in September. This was the thing that was being held hostage by Pelosi over the last few months. And she and the leadership, as well as the Senate, made the decision to bundle this with the omnibus, the bigger spending bill. And so we were painted into a corner, and we voted against, most of the party voted against doing this as a single vote. We were asking to have it decoupled so we could have individual votes, one for the COVID and one for the appropriations bill. And we were on the losing side of that vote. So we had to tell those suffering from COVID no, or we had to tell the military and the NDAA and the defense budget no. And as we were getting to go into recess, that was something that I personally couldn't do. I couldn't, despite how fat this bill is and how much pork is in there, we still needed to get the relief into the hands of those who have been suffering for far too long. And we had to swallow the bullet, unfortunately.
this is the same conundrum. You know, there's a lot of pressure on President Trump to veto this bill. But politically, you have Georgia and the Senate runoff races just around the corner on January 5th. You have a lot of people who are suffering. And so we came up with a little idea during the program, Congressman Garcia. We said that maybe what should happen is that President Trump should do a press conference and talk about all of this extra stuff that was thrown into this bill. Say he's going to sign it because he wants to get people COVID relief, but call on Congress to do better. Because, and this isn't you, Congressman Garcia, this is the leadership that has come together. They put together this bill with everything in it, not thinking of Americans first, instead thinking about everyone else and some crazy things that were put into this bill that we've talked about already, like a gas can commission to prevent people from burning themselves up with flammable liquids. I mean, it's insane, but you had to make that hard choice. And I know that you're a guy who supports the president and supports conservative principles, but you had to make the choice to vote for this because otherwise people in your district suffering in California being closed down since March would not get any relief at all.
That's right. And in the end, really, this was a four-corner agreement between Mnuchin under the administration, the Senate, and the House leadership, both Pelosi and McCarthy. So this wasn't done in a vacuum necessarily at the highest level. So I think it did have agreement by all four. I think they all hated it. Part of that is a symptom of a passable bill and good compromise and work in our democracy here in our federal republic. But if there's a positive to this, it's there is now a bright, shiny light on all of the crap that we pay for.
That's right.
In our appropriations bill on an annual basis. And what this should allow us to do, instead of putting a gun to my head and asking me to vote on a 6,000-page document in the span of 3 hours, we'll be motivated to pull this to the left next time and have the conversations and do the deep dives on what's in these bills. And, you know, unfortunately, we're being held hostage not only on the COVID bill by Pelosi, but also on the appropriations bill. It is why people hate Congress, and I get it.
And you have just to become, well, your race, for those people who don't know, and I've talked about you when I'm here with Seb on Wednesdays, our Crazy California Report. For people that don't know, this was the seat that was held by Katie Hill. Many people heard her story. She resigned from Congress. The seat was open. There was a special election. You won the special election over Christy Smith and served in Congress for a few months, but then you had to run again this November. And for people who don't think that their votes count, Mike Garcia, you won this seat. I think the official count was it 333 votes is what you won your seat by?
That's right, 333 votes.
So anybody who gives you that head shake and says that the votes don't matter, they absolutely do. They do here. And look, I know you had to make a hard decision and vote on that bill today. I don't think anybody feels great about it, but we appreciate that you recognize the interest. Can you hang out for one more segment and talk about the future of the 2020 election?
Absolutely.
All right. Hang on. Mike Garcia, Congressman Mike Garcia from California's 25th District is with us. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Garcia 2020. And we will have more. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka on America First.
America First.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America First. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
There we go. It is magnificent. Welcome back to America First. I'm Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Joining me on the line is Congressman Mike Garcia from California's 25th district. And you can follow him, Mike Garcia 2020 on Twitter is the place. All right. So let's jump into the 2020 election, Congressman Garcia, because President Trump has met with some of your colleagues. He did it yesterday in the Oval Office. And during that time, he said that he was building kind of his defense for what will happen in Congress on the 6th of January when the Electoral College transmits the results of the 2020 election. What do you expect to see from some of your colleagues? And do you think there's going to be a fight on the floor to make the case that voter fraud did skew the outcome of this election?
Yeah, I mean, every day that goes by, I actually start believing more and more that there will be a formal objection from at least some of the state's electors that are being brought forward for the count. So I anticipate it. I think it'll likely start in the House, and it sounds like there may be a couple senators just looking at articles that I'm reading. I'm not privy to any of the inside conversations that are going on around it. But yeah, I do think it'll be an interesting time from a constitutional perspective and as a representative to be there.
Now, you in your district had a lot of ballot harvesting at play. There was obviously the universal mail-in that rolled out for the first time in California. Talk about some of the you hear these stories, I know you have, from your constituents about voter fraud and irregularities. Do you think that there was enough of it to change the outcome of the election based on what you heard in your own district?
So in my district, I don't think there was. I think there is always fraud in most elections, and almost every election. There's going to be some level of fraud, whether it's people that get a ballot that was mailed to their kid that left for college and they still filled it out. That's fraud, right? In my district, and I'm coming from the belly of the beast when it comes to election reform, California is the most screwed up. We have every possible way that works against us here. No ID required. It's a 20-day window to vote. It's every voter gets a ballot in the mail. There's no chain of custody of those things. So this is really the hardest place to win and really have confidence that it's being done right. What we did is we put lawyers in every registrar's office, three different locations, about 3 weeks prior to the election actually happening and the votes being counted. And it's a sad statement that you have to have, you know, that many sharks in the aquarium in order just to feel confident that you've got voter integrity and election integrity behind it. So at a national level, the more I see, the more I become suspicious. And I think there is enough evidence out there to question whether or not this fraud actually did impact the outcome of the election. And this is why I signed on to Mo Brooks' letter. I was one of 18 members who signed on to Mo Brooks' letter to have the evidence brought forward in front of the House so we can see it firsthand. We can ask questions. We can figure out what went wrong, what was the magnitude of the fraud, and whether or not it impacted the election. We haven't gotten any traction on that, obviously beholden to Pelosi at this point. But I think it's becoming a very valid question and has been a very valid question. And we need to see firsthand and be able to make those decisions coming up on January 6th.
And it seems like what you're asking for, Mike, in that letter, and I saw that 18 congressmen and women signed on to this letter. And you're asking almost for a hearing even prior to that date, right? Before January 6th, right, so that you can actually go through some of the evidence, because we've seen a lot of evidence online. We've seen evidence in some news media outlets that choose to carry it. We've seen some presented in courtrooms, but we really haven't seen it all together in one place. So to hold this congressional hearing, you're at least getting your colleagues a sample of what really is there and what legitimately could have, or maybe not in that case, really change the outcome of the election, or maybe uphold the outcome. At least people who feel like there's a question would feel like they could have their suspicions reassured.
That's exactly what it is. And it's seeking the truth. It's seeking the data so that we can make informed decisions rather than emotional decisions, either for or against. And look, I come from a district where there's only 31% Republicans. I won by 333 votes. I am a supporter of President Trump, and he's a supporter of mine. So, you know, this isn't necessarily for me a party thing. This is about making sure that when we have elections in the future that we can feel secure about them. We can have confidence in the integrity of the outcome. And I think that's what the president's pushing for at this point. So, yes, we asked for the evidence to be brought forward. Something similar to that was done in the Senate. But frankly, it was done at a time when a lot of the evidence out of the states hadn't really manifested. And it's disappointing that some of these state legislators aren't doing the deeper dives like they need to. They're not doing the changes and the recounts and the validations like they should be. And again, it's not about necessarily the person running. It's about the integrity of the election and the constitutional value of what we all do here.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I've had a lot of people who push back kind of against the optimism that I have that we need to have this fight. I don't have this fight because I just have to see President Trump get in no matter what, or because I don't want to respect the outcome of the election. I do. I want everybody who has a vote to and has a legal right to vote to go out there and exercise that right. But I think this matters for the future of our election. We learned a lesson here in California in 2018. Republicans were completely outplayed in 2018. Your seat was switched from Republican to Democrat in that race. Many others were as well. People who had been sitting in Congress for a long time were uprooted because of this. And we learned a lesson during that year that this pushing of the rules and kind of eking things out to try to get your way in election exists. And so I've seen it here in California. I know you have too. On a national level, whether it changes the outcome of the election or not, we will never have a free and fair election again if we don't actually figure out what went wrong and how we fix it.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. And then at a federal level, and you know that I'm a federalist, so I believe in the downloading the authority and the decision making to the lowest levels of government. But at a national level, we need some level setting standards so that we're all working from the same playbook. When you say election day in California, that means 20 days and everyone gets a mail-in right. ballot. When you say it in Florida, it's one day and only absentee requested ballots go out. So we've got to normalize that and still leave it up to the states to execute it, leave it up to the counties to conduct it. But it's confusing right now. And when you've got so many different sets of rules across 50 states and their regions, it's almost impossible to assure integrity. So I'm okay with a four-day election where Tuesday is a holiday. I'm okay with mail-in ballots as long as they're requested, but we absolutely need voter ID. It's not a racial thing. It's not prejudice to ask someone to produce an ID.
No, it's to ensure people's safety. Absolutely. Mike Garcia, thanks for joining us today. Follow him right now at Mike Garcia 2020. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Enjoy the break, Mike Garcia, and we appreciate you. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. This is America First.
I'm Sebastian Gorka on America First. Let's get back to the show with Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. G. It is such a pleasure to be in with you or in for you on America First. I want to tell you that I am so thankful for all of you. Whenever I turn to this audience to ask for help for a worthy cause like Angel Tree Campaign, you never, ever let me down. Thanks to Angel Tree, kids with a mom or dad in prison are reminded year-round, but especially at Christmas, that their incarcerated parent still loves them. And Prison Fellowship volunteer Stacey Campbell says she'll never forget the first time she got to bless a prisoner's child with a Christmas present made possible by donors just like you.
And it was a little boy answered the door and I said, oh, here's a gift from your dad. And it was just this, oh, he remembered me. And I think the whole gift kind of fades into the background. It's that connection and that realization that I belong and my friends are having Christmas, but I'm having Christmas too. I'm worthy as a little kid. And that's the part that doesn't leave you.
What a special blessing children receive from the Angel Tree program. But we're only 72 hours away from Christmas. So now it's your turn. Share the love of Jesus through a donation to our Angel Tree campaign. Just go to SebGorka.com, click on the Angel Tree banner. For a gift of just $220, you can bless 10 children of prisoners with personalized Christmas presents and a personal note from their incarcerated parent. Plus, every Angel Tree family is also given access to a free, easy-to-read copy of the Bible in English or Spanish. Now, it's getting late, but there is still time to make Christmas special for a boy or girl who really need the hope. Today, please go to SebGorka.com, click on the Angel Tree banner, and thank you so much for caring. Merry Christmas to all of you, by the way, from all of us here at America First, from Jeff and Shad and Eric and Seb himself. We wish you all a very happy holiday. And before we leave today, a little bit of news breaking. Joe Biden said in a press conference today, but the news media, I hear, went very easy on him, that his son Hunter's business dealings had not come up in discussions about his highly anticipated pick for attorney general. A reporter asked, has the issue of investigations with your son come up with your team and with candidates about attorney general? He said, no, I guarantee you I'm going to do what I said. The attorney general of the United States is not the president's lawyer. I will appoint someone I expect to enforce the law as the law is written, not guided by me. Too bad Eric Holder, President Obama's AG, didn't get that same message. He celebrated being Obama's wingman. Now, shortly after, Biden was asked by Peter Doocy from Fox News whether he thought previous stories regarding his son's laptop were the work of Russian disinformation. And according to Joe Biden, his response was, yes, yes. God love you, man. You're a one-horse pony, I tell you. So Russian disinformation for at least Joe Biden thinks it's part of the story on Hunter Biden's laptop. You know, now that's probably not the case. Those investigations still ongoing. Thank you so much for joining me today. Check out SebGorka.com. Love it if you follow me on Twitter at Jennifer Horn. You can always check me out as well on The Morning Answer in Los Angeles, AM 870, AM 590. And thank you to everyone, Jeff, Shad, and Seb for letting me fill in today. So much fun. Seb will be back next week. Merry Christmas to all of you. Make it a great Tuesday.